always makes me nervous, and then I feel like I'm, you know, kind of in Egypt. But anyway, if I can do this. I'm going to read a few poems. I hope I planned the timing right. Certainly try to. A couple of these are new, and some of them are in the book, The Geese at the Gates. The first poem is based on a childhood memory. So I wanted to write something that would be from the beginning of adolescence, that I think is a really formative time for everybody. And so the first job I ever had at the age of 13, and I don't know how I ever got this job, but I was a lifeguard. So that's the title of the poem, Lifeguard. And it's based on real events that actually happened. So they trod her into the blue concrete. I saw that. She tried to push upward, her arms like streaks of pale fish at the shallow bottom of the water slide. Well, maybe I saw that in the chop of children. 13th summer, first job, the world an unforgiving mirror. The new bikini riding up in the back. I had refused to wear my glasses. Hold this safety pole and stand there. Just watch. Can you do that? Just watch, okay? And I did, but she was still under, doing the doggy paddle all wrong. I felt that. So I jumped in, pulled her to the surface, wondered at the weight of her head rolling on my shoulder. I did not call for help, only ran like some big gawking bird, bouncing the child out the gates of the supervised area. I may have shouted at her above the fun, above the din of their horrible little minds, so easy with their feet and their throats and their team sports and their sing-alongs. She coughed and started crying, and stupidly I lay her on her side and slapped her back and said, good, that's good, coughing is good. I am sure I carried her to the nurse's station. Someone said, get a towel. Or maybe we were both wrapped in one big blanket, side by side on the edge of the medical bed, shivering less and less. And then nothing happened. Plowed in through the screen door, the open windows, unmeasurable nothing, even into September. Here's a short one. I wanted to write one in the voice of my father. My father's side of the family, and I'm obviously from America, is from the American South, and part of our heritage is American Indian, of the Creek Muscogee Indians of what is now southern Alabama. So here's something from, again, a childhood memory, something my dad taught me, and it kind of represents some of the things that survive. Some of the things that you'd never think would survive from people who have been compromised, who have been almost annihilated in other ways. But sometimes cultural things kind of get passed down in unexpected ways. So here's this one that's called Invisibility Lesson Number One. And my dad says, daughter, this is the way Indians walk in the woods. This is the way human beings walk in the woods. Your weight on the outer edge of the foot, like a blade in the earth. Roll heel to toe. Bend the knees. Relax the shoulders so. Eyes follow four directions. Down, ahead, left, right. Faster now and silent. Down, ahead, left, right. Ears more open than eyes. You'll know when you get it right by the deer ignoring you and the arrowhead hunters with their shovels and sieves, shouting your obituary right across your path. I love animals, and I had to do something. I kind of want to take you through time a little bit with me as well. And so I have a cat poem, and if you're a cat hater, don't ever tell me that, because I may have to kill you, I'm sorry. But anyway, this one is set in the Midwest of America, in a big old house like they have there. And at a time when my children were younger, a lot younger than they are now, and so was I. And again, based on true experience, called Cat Revelation. I know a thing or two about cats, and that scrawny black skeleton with dirty socks curled in the empty geranium pot on the porch was one fine haven for bugs and stink. Ball of running sores, why cling to our yard for 2 weeks under threat of animal control and then vanish? 3 days into blissful relief and a new potted geranium, the neighbor's daughter, best friend of our own, knocked at the door, cradling that sad sack of fur, child weeping and cat dripping with the reek of gasoline. I guess that's petrol here. Petrol cat. My mom's at work and my dad's in the shower, and I thought you'd know what to do. And I thought, oh, you lucky man in the shower. At this of all times, me with a house full of children and a known oversized bathtub at the top of the stairs, and I thought, I know how to say no to destiny. And I said, give me the cat and we'll wash it. Kneeling by the tub where a tall woman can stretch out and enjoy a good soak, I reddened my hands through 20 sloshing shampoos, the last 6 using laundry detergent, 5 visiting children and 2 of my own, leaned over me shouting advice, falling onto my aching shoulders or into the tub. Fumes watered my eyes as I needed that paltry, squeezed toy body that never mewed, scrambled, scratched, nor bit, but stood in the frothing waves and took whatever I sent her way, head above water, eyes heavenward. There's nothing more certain than this. No one can wash a cat 20 times in front of children, dry it, and watch it eat a can of tuna intended for dinner, with a patch of late sun angling through the kitchen door to blaze gold in the cat's left eye, without something turning over in the soul, without the cat revealing its true name. All right. This one is set in a small town in Missouri. I live in St. Louis, Missouri, and a little bit north along the Mississippi River is a little town called Hannibal. It is famous for having been the home of the American writer Mark Twain. And like many towns in America, and I think in here in Ireland as well, it has fallen on hard times. It has never really recovered from the economic whatever the hell that was that happened in, when was it, 2008 or something. And one thing you need to know about this poem, because I really hope you can visualize it, is on the main street, which is like the saddest stretch of couple of streets you can imagine. I don't mean urban sprawl sad. I mean, it used to actually be a little quaint American town, you know, like old movie kind of thing, and now it's just gone to shit. But anyway, they try to drum up some business and tourist interest by having some of the local children dress up like characters out of Mark Twain books. And Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, and Becky Thatcher are three child figures from those books, but also in this poem are real people walking down the street, though time kind of shifts a bit, so I hope that'll work. There's some mention of animals in here, some of which, I guess you might not know what they are, and I can't remember what's what in here, but hopefully it'll make sense. So, here we go. I'll try to amp up my twang a little for this one.
The accent's important in that one.
Hannibal, Missouri. Someone cracked this cafe window and no one really cares anymore. You can get six kinds of burgers, but they don't serve french fries here. Tom Sawyer tips his cap, trotting by on his way back down to 1844. And Hannibal, Missouri has more cars than people, even counting tourists rolling in on Highway 61. Becky Thatcher strolls down Main Street with a smile and a pistol in her hand. She turns in at the river where the setting sun makes halos on her white lace parasol, and the purple martins scatter, knowing better than to ever hang around, while the eagles claw the fish up from the water just to pierce their silver skins here on the sand. They put locks on the river and run the flooding streams all underground, through sewer pipes big as freight trains, where the lilies and hellbenders never found a home among those waters that used to feel the wind and rain quick marching over stone. And Finn came home today, his second tour of duty done, after leaving both his legs on a road back in East Afghanistan. And Beulah looks around the town from her gravestone high on Calvary Hill. 10 more houses dark for dinner, with for sale signs from the bank by every porch. And the ghost tour never tells you how the living are much better for a haunt. While the kids out by the Dairy Queen prefer their cherry vodka mixed with ice cream in the blizzard of the month. And the lovers hope for jobs by the off-ramp at the Walmart superstore. Oh, I'm gonna get my friends together and roll down to the sea on a paddle boat lit for Christmas, just the way we wish it used to be. And we'll slide past St. Louis with its car parks and its monuments, all the way to New Orleans, where the dead know how to play those old-time tunes. And maybe Big Jim's bar is open with the flood stains high on the walls, and we can dance under the water with all the folks who ever passed away, and by the parish levee, I can finally get up off my knees.
I don't know, do I have too many? Do you want to hear about a dog named Bullet Dog?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I'll tell you about Bullet Dog. In St. Louis, there was an incident. This did not affect me, did not happen to my family. I always have to say that. But it is real and it did happen to other people. And I was asked to write a dog poem for an anthology to raise money for dog rescue. And I tried to write one about a real dog that was not really up to standard. But yet, okay, you'll see. Bullet Dog. My dog is not a hero. He hasn't tunneled. Oh, I forgot to tell you. I list a bunch of stuff about dogs here. All of it is true. All of it. And I know it's true because I found all of it on the internet.
Of course.
I think it's true. My dog is not a hero. He hasn't tunneled 100 yards through dirt and snow in 40 below to drag me firmly but gently by my hands from certain death to the road. He might someday bark and scramble over the bed in spite of smoke just in time to wake us people to get out of there. So far, he has never treed a bear or run off a mountain lion or hauled a child out of a river or dialed the police all by himself. His skull is so thick, his neck gets tired. He sheds enough to clog the Hoover. He's good at eating, but not digesting. His farts bubble up the paint on the wall at the exact height of his ass. He has not braved a four-lane highway to drag an injured fellow dog to safety, never used his nose to locate someone in the rubble, or dashed under the hooves of a charging bull to distract it from a man knocked to the ground. He's not as big as he ought to be. One eye looks sideways all the time, and his hips aren't right. We never knew he could jump at all until that one time. He flew at that man, kicking down our door on a dark night in ordinary April. The muzzle flash and the pop froze us as the bullet grooved his skull right down the middle, ricocheting into the kitchen, and evidently the sight of my dog's big head shaking off the blood and surging forward with a rolling sideways eye and the streaming slobber from the gap-toothed snarling maw, determined beyond all sense on a not big enough body, with its clattering paws, that was just enough to make that gunman fall back out the door and run. My dog has a scar on his head, like the map of a river.
I'll just read two more poems, and one is in the voice of all of the water that comes from a watershed. So all of the little rivulets, all of the little rivers that come down to feed the bigger rivers, and here I guess the only equivalent river to the Mississippi might be the Shannon. But so think of that and kind of magnify it by a few hundred miles or so. So this is a poem in the voice of that water, kind of personified, and it's called Watershed Warning. Erect blue towers on my body, I lie low in sweet reflection. To all my creatures give provision. I layer the stone to mark the way. At my edges, leave your boot print. Test my wetlands with your poisons. Where the absent salamanders follow with me to the river. Light of weasel, light of vole, light of eagle, trout, and otter, all my wild geese sound the trumpet. Regard your mother, I will take you down. Anti-water pollution poem. And my last one is the only one I'm reading tonight that is actually set in Ireland. This is set in the town of Enniscorthy, County Wexford, my husband's hometown, my adopted hometown, a town I love very much, and that I think is a very beautiful place. And this is about a number of things, but one of the things I don't know if you're aware of, It went through some improvements, you know when they tell you they're improving something and it turns out that what they mean is they're destroying it. So that's a little bit in the background. That was part of the boom times here, that you may have remember development kind of run wild. So this is called Wild Orchids, and here we go. That was the year we strode the prom between the rail line and the Slaney River, turning under the bridge to climb back to the rush of traffic on the road to town.
masked in the field that was your boyhood soccer pitch. Wild orchids towered over us, swaying above the ferns and grasses, their purple blooms drifting like faces, brightened in the sunlit mist, witness to the river, passing trains, the lone blue heron, horses on the island, and our rain-jacketed selves complaining of the weather and wondering how to solve this or that here or there. One time we saw a double rainbow arc the river on the tide's retreat to Wexford. From a chestnut tree, a nightingale pierced the summer night with its lament, and we knew none of our cynical friends would believe such walks real or even possible. Progress pocked the town. Some nights a smell of burning threaded all along the streets like a builder's promise. Yellow machines scraped the ground raw of rubble behind the market square where the old hotel once stood. But we, along the river, walk again and hope for no further improvements. Thank you. And I just want to say thank you very much for inviting me here. It's wonderful to be with you.